I want to kind of do a roundup of a bunch of different stories that have taken place recently that I have commented on in daily posts that I post up on platforms like Telegram, X, even YouTube. I'll show you where on YouTube you can find that. And let's just get right into it. I want to talk about U.S. President Donald Trump meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping. This meeting has created a storm of analysis. You have different people, so-called experts, you know, parsing every little sentence and word and gesture, micro-analyzing absolutely everything. And I just want to remind people that President Trump did this during his first term. He met with President Putin. He met with President Xi. And he had nothing but good things to say about all of them, how bright and wonderful the future would be between the U.S. and all of these countries. And then for the rest of his term in office, he just picked up right where President Barack Obama left off in encircling and containing both of these countries, which is a decade-spanning policy the U.S. has been pursuing since actually all throughout the Cold War, since the end of World War II, all throughout the Cold War and ever since. And that continues even to this day. So we're just watching a repeat of President Trump's first term in office. He's meeting with President Putin, and then he's escalating the war in Ukraine against Russia. That is a U.S. war being waged against Russia through Ukraine. He posed as wanting to end it. He blamed the Biden administration for starting it. His Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, claimed that it is a U.S. proxy war being fought against Russia through Ukraine. And then he not just continues it, but he is actually escalating it out of one side of his mouth while out of the other side of his mouth claiming he wants to end it. So it's just typical. This is what he did all during his first term. And now he's doing it through his second term. And he's doing the exact same thing in terms of U.S.-Chinese relations. So everybody pumped up on hope that because President Trump called the U.S. and China G2, this means he has ended a decades-spanning unipolar world order led by the United States for U.S. special interests, unelected interests, the same interests every presidential administration has worked for, including the Trump administration, previous and current. Somehow, by just saying not even a word, just a letter and a number, somehow that has ended this decades-spanning objective of these deeply rooted, unelected corporate financier special interests. So let's go to X. This is the post that I did on this. Short memories regarding agreement incapable American. I do believe it was Russia that labeled the United States as agreement incapable. And it's not because President Donald Trump is agreement incapable or President Joe Biden is agreement incapable. It's because of the unelected special interests in the U.S. driving U.S. foreign policy. They are agreement incapable. They are determined to maintain U.S. primacy over the entire planet. They do not accept the concept of a rival, ally, or adversary alike. They reject that. They want a unipolar world order. You cannot make an agreement with people who see themselves as superior to everyone else and who rejects the very concept of working together with others rather than placing everyone under they themselves. So let's go back. Recent U.S.-Chinese talks regarding the array of tariffs, restrictions, sanctions, and other financial, economic, and diplomatic measures the U.S. is trying to and failing to use to contain China are almost irrelevant. So the outcome of this meeting is virtually irrelevant. I'll explain in just a minute. The U.S. is incapable of upholding its own proposals and agreements and certainly will not honor any agreements made from a position of weakness. And I will go on to explain in this post that the U.S. is an empire in decline. And in many ways, it is operating from a position of weakness. And it will agree to things with Russia and with China just out of pure pragmatism. Not because it thinks that, well, now we have to adjust our position and we have to be more rational and reasonable and just accept our place in a multipolar world order. No, they are buying space and time to reorganize themselves so that they can reassert themselves. That is all they have ever did. That is exactly what they are doing right now. This is what I explained. Progress and it's in quotation marks, emerging from talks will take the same form as temporary pause and reorganization before the U.S. doubles down on another campaign of attempting to encircle and contain China, both through the above stated measures, so things like tariffs, restrictions, sanctions, and all of these other measures, but also through the military and non-military means of coercion and political capture along China's periphery, and the toppling of governments friendly with Beijing, Venezuela among them. So even amongst all of this talk, I see analysts, so-called analysts, talking about the U.S. and China, they're writing a new chapter for their collective future. Even as they're saying these things, the U.S. is openly toppling governments right on China's border. They just toppled the government in Nepal right on China's border. And they are threatening to maliciously, for no reason and no justification at all, they're talking about invading and overthrowing the government of Venezuela. That is because it is an ally of both Russia and China, also Iran. The U.S. is essentially waging an undeclared war against all of these countries. Because it cannot get what it wants directly from these countries, it is targeting their allies they believe are too far-flung for these nations to help defend it. They're probably right about that. And we're probably going to watch Venezuela suffer serious death and destruction, if not a total collapse of the government, because of this, because nothing has fundamentally changed. The U.S. is still pursuing this singular obsession of global primacy. They are not getting what they want because they are an empire in decline. And so they are looking for other ways, more indirect ways, to try to reassert their domination over the planet and remove from the board allies, partners, potential partners from this growing multipolar world to further isolate it, to give the U.S. a better chance of reasserting itself over it and containing multipolarism before it irreversibly ascends over U.S.-led hegemony. When the U.S. has recalibrated its policy of encirclement and containment of China, it will sidestep any agreements it has made and will relaunch any and all measures it thinks will undermine China's rise both within its borders and well beyond them. How many times have we seen the U.S. make all kinds of agreements with Russia, with China, with Iran? It was in the middle of making an agreement with Iran when it, through Israel, struck at Iran, attempted a decapitation campaign aimed at its military, scientific, and political leadership, and then the U.S. itself attacked Iran in open, again, war of aggression against Iran. And so that is what they will do with China. And they're already openly doing it. And China knows this. It's just, do these analysts in the West, including in the alternative media, do they understand this? Or do they just not care? That's a question we have to ask ourselves. The U.S. doesn't do diplomacy. How much more obvious does this need to be for people to understand this? There is no diplomacy. The U.S. has no concept of diplomacy. Instead, what it does is buy time and space to create conditions that may not currently be optimal to achieve its long-term objective. That objective always has been and continues to be global primacy and the elimination of all rivals, adversary and ally alike. Unless this fundamental objective and the interests driving it change, and they aren't, and they won't anytime in the near future, the only thing about U.S. policy that will change are the ways it attempts to pursue this and nothing else. Okay, so it's very important to understand that. And now, no sooner did I post this than the next day I was looking at a couple of things, actually. I was looking at, first of all, I've been tracking the U.S. buildup for war with Venezuela. So, again, people thinking that Trump is turning this around and he's breaking free from decades of U.S. Pursuit of primacy, even as he's openly planning to attack and overthrow the government of Venezuela. But there are all of these other aspects that demonstrate nothing at all has changed in terms of U.S. foreign policy objectives, just the approach they're taking to try to achieve them. And so I posted that. Then I received an email from someone in Malaysia, and they were asking me to look into Malaysia's Anwar Ibrahim. Now, I have been warning about him for years, because as you can see in this picture right here, He has been a U.S. National Endowment for Democracy stooge. I don't know what other word to use for years and years. This is him literally in Washington, D.C., hanging out with the National Endowment for Democracy. Here's Carl Gershman, the former head of the National Endowment for Democracy. There he is, in case you... Is that Anwar Ibrahim? Yes, that's Anwar Ibrahim. He's a panelist, and he's a frequent attendee at NED events in the United States. And also, his whole political movement in Malaysia has been built up by the National Endowment for Democracy, George Soros' Open Society, all the NED subsidiaries like the International Republican Institute, the National Democratic Institute. They literally built up his whole political movement, and they got it into power. And then there was a point where Malaysia's own deeply seated interests, they tried to maybe win him over or collaborate with him, maybe trying to neutralize his loyalty, his allegiance to the United States. And then people were telling me, look, Brian, Anwar Ibrahim, he's meeting with China. You're completely wrong about him. I'm not wrong about him. He literally is working with and for the National Endowment for Democracy. This is indisputable. It's indisputable. It is a fact. When you see these people meeting with China, you have to understand the United States has no ability to offer any country the sort of opportunity that China offers economically, in terms of infrastructure, production, any sort of material reality. China has all of these offers to make. The United States has no offer to make. It's almost suicidal for a country, no matter how much aligned it is with the United States, to just completely cut itself off from China. Even the U.S. itself is finding it very hard to cut itself completely off from China. Look at countries like the Philippines or Japan or South Korea, completely politically captured by the United States, and yet China is still their largest or one of their largest trade partners in terms of imports, exports, investments, and all kinds of other dealings. So that in and of itself is not evidence that somehow Anwar Ibrahim switched sides. He worked for the NED for years and years. His whole political base of power was built up by the United States. His allegiance is to the United States. And people who do this can never, ever be trusted. And that is what I say in this post. So we're talking about a free trade deal that Anwar Ibrahim signed with the United States. And his political allies, who used to be opposed to him, there was this period of time where they tried to win him over, including Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, a very famous, long-standing Malaysian politician who has fought for Malaysian independence. Again, you have to remember, Malaysia used to be a British colony, and the U.S. ever since has been trying to reassert Western control over Malaysia. Continued criticism of trade deal politically driven, says Anwar. So he made this deal with the United States, a free trade agreement. Again, the U.S. has nothing to actually offer Malaysia. So anytime you make a free trade agreement with the United States, you're just surrendering your economic sovereignty to the U.S. and its corporations. The very corporations driving this foreign policy objective that I continuously go back to, wanting to assert primacy over the planet, subordinate all of these nations to U.S. interests, and doing it through compromised and politically captured figures like Anwar Ibrahim himself. And so in this article, it talks about how he has continued to defend Malaysia's recently signed trade agreement with the U.S., dismissing criticism from former prime ministers and including Dr. Mahathir Mohamad as being politically motivated. And he simply dismisses all of their very legitimate concerns. And people are starting to realize Anwar Ibrahim used to serve U.S. interests. He still serves U.S. interests. He serves U.S. interests at the expense of Malaysia's interests. That is how U.S. political capture works. I'm going to get into a little bit more of that here in just a moment. And so what I say is, there are people out there who argued with me recently claiming that my warnings about Malaysia's Anwar Ibrahim's history as a U.S. stooge, and in particular his role for years in the National Endowment for Democracy, were somehow irrelevant considering his recent dealings with China. And then I explain, you have to deal with China. Even Aung San Suu Kyi, again, handcrafted sock puppet of the United States government for decades. Her opposition party used to be literally based in Washington, D.C. before they moved it to Myanmar and then installed it into power. And then there was a military coup that ousted her. And people said, Aung San Suu Kyi met with President Xi Jinping. So maybe the army in Myanmar is backed by the U.S. and they're kicking her out because she met with President Xi Jinping. Everyone meets with President Xi Jinping. China is one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful country on earth in terms of at least economic, scientific, and technological power. Everyone meets with China, including President Donald J. Trump and even President Joe Biden before him. Everyone meets President Xi Jinping. Meeting with someone and shaking their hands doesn't mean you're actually friends with them. I mean, do I even need to explain this? And so when you see Aung San Suu Kyi or Anwar Ibrahim dealing with China, that does not mean that they are allies or partners with China. They're doing it out of a sense of pragmatism. They have to. They're located right there near China. Their economy is so entwined with China. If they were to just cut it off, everything would collapse and they would not become a very useful proxy of the U.S. if everything collapsed overnight and they were destitute and in complete ruin. So you have to be a little more sophisticated than looking at a picture of a handshake and then thinking, oh, they must be allies. No, they're not allies. They're not friends. Shaking hands means virtually nothing. So him meeting with China, dealing with China, because Malaysia's economy is so entwined with China, doesn't mean anything. That should not be mistaken for a change in loyalty, as Anwar Ibrahim's recent signing of a compromising free trade deal with the U.S. has been condemned by even his own recent allies who tried to win him over from his past service to the U.S., including Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, who called the free trade agreement the handing over of Malaysia's sovereignty. That's very strong language from Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. I don't think he would say that lightly. The type of people who work with the NED can never be trusted and will always be a liability to their nation and people. Anwar Ibrahim is no exception. So I was right about him. And he is demonstrating why you don't let someone with a history of collaborating with foreign interests at the expense of your own country's sovereignty. This is why you don't let them anywhere near power. You need to keep them out of power. And you have to ask yourself, if this guy is so popular that you have to accommodate him, what is wrong with your country and its security mechanisms that have allowed this huge network to be built up to support him and get him into power? And again, it goes back to the NED, controlling your own information space, rooting out the NED and all the organizations it is funding in your country to politically capture it and, in a sense, continue modern day colonialism in the 21st century. That is what the NED is there to do. You absolutely failed to meet and stop this national security threat. And now you have this person who is compromised in a position of power, and he is signing over Malaysia's sovereignty to the United States. So that's one piece of evidence that people should look at and say, no, well, President Trump is saying G2 and he's shaking hands with President Xi Jinping, but he's politically captured and compromising the sovereignty of Malaysia. Why is he doing that? He's doing that in the same way the U.S. encircled and contained Russia with the expansion of NATO, the political capture of governments in Eastern Europe, including Ukraine, Georgia, in the Caucasus region even. They're doing the exact same thing in Asia all along China's periphery. They've already recently overthrew the government in Nepal. You have NED-funded collaborators now in the interim government there. And now they're starting to pivot Malaysia. What else? I saw Pete Hegseth. Yes, sir. The killing of innocent Christians in Nigeria and anywhere. And then in parentheses, I think he meant to say, except Syria, must end immediately. The Department of War. And again, people are trying to tell me that President Trump is turning everything around, and yet he renames the Department of Defense to the Department of War. And they're obviously preparing for war with both Russia and China and everyone in between. And people are still trying to tell me that President Donald Trump is turning everything, he's changing everything. The Department of War is preparing for action. Well, what kind of action does the Department of War prepare for? Well, they prepare for the type of action that constitutes war. That's why it's called the Department of War. Either the let's read the whole thing. Either the Nigerian government protects Christians, or we will kill the Islamic terrorists who are committing those horrible atrocities. Who are these Islamic terrorists? They're actually CIA, armed, trained, backed, supplied, directed terrorists. Has nothing to do with Islam at all. As a matter of fact, the number one victim of this extremism the U.S. created, and arms and funds and supplies and directs across the entire Middle East and North African region, and now all the way to Nigeria. These extremists prey primarily on Muslims stretched across this whole region, but then also other ethnic and religious minorities, including Christians. And it isn't just Christians in Nigeria that have been targeted by these U.S. proxies. Again, if you look here, let's skip this one for now. I'll go back to that one. Here's President Donald Trump shaking hands with al-Jalani, the head of al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda branch in Syria the U.S. created, armed, and directed, and used to overthrow the Syrian government, including during all throughout President Trump's first term in office. He is shaking hands with a man whose organization was mass slaughtering Christians in Syria. And now al-Jalani is even being invited to the White House. So when you see Secretary Hegseth thumping on his chest about, oh, we're going to take action in Nigeria if the government won't protect Christians, your government is shaking hands with Christian killers, arming them, backing them. You handed all of Syria over to them. And now you're going to invite them to the White House. And I bet you Secretary Hegseth will be sitting there smiling and shaking hands with al-Jalani, just like President Trump and everyone else will be. Again, there are these analysts who insist that the U.S. is transforming into a constructive member of the multipolar world, even as it openly slashes and burns at it at every possible opportunity. And so now they are, what they're doing right here, what you see, Pete Hegseth, and if we come up here, we have Tulsi Gabbard, okay? Again, another neocon in sheep's clothing, pretending that she's going to bring all of this change to U.S. and the intelligence community. And then as soon as she gets into office, she's, you know, smiling ear to ear as the U.S. bombs Yemen, justifying it, changing her own position on the supposed state of Iran's nuclear weapons program that there is no evidence that even exists. And now here she is, side by side with Secretary Hegseth, building consensus, manufacturing consent for some sort of U.S. military intervention in Nigeria, which, by the way, has tremendous wealth in terms of oil. And so what a coincidence. Syria, Nigeria, Venezuela, all extremely oil-rich and pivotal nations that are part of the growing multipolar world that the U.S. wants to remove from the rise of multipolarism, precisely because it opposes it and is actively working to stop it. Okay, so that's very important to understand. So that was Tulsi Gabbard. That was Secretary Hegseth building consensus for war of some kind in Nigeria. Tulsi Gabbard also was talking about recently, President Trump has ended regime change. That is a failed policy. The U.S. is right now trying to overthrow the government of Iran. It is openly preparing to and openly declaring that it will overthrow the government of Venezuela. It has already overthrown the government of Nepal. It has actively attempted to overthrow the government in Indonesia, has politically captured the government in Malaysia, and is pivoting it with this free trade agreement. And I'm going to get to the Philippines, Australia, Japan, and South Korea here in just a moment. So out of one side of her mouth, we're ending regime change. Out of the other side of her mouth, she is building consensus, manufacturing consent to actually do more regime change, to meddle and interfere in even more places around the globe. Continuity of agenda. And the problem is, people who support Donald J. Trump or people who supported Biden or Obama, they tune in to liberal or conservative media, which is just all deep state propaganda, selling the same exact lie but under different branding and messaging. And these people tune into this these outlets, Breitbart, Newsmax, Fox News, and then if you're a liberal, MSNBC, and you have people like Rachel Maddow, they're all telling you the exact same lie, but with just different messaging and branding. It's like a giant corrupt corporation selling poison to people under different brands to target different target markets. And these people tune into this media, and if this media doesn't tell them something is happening in their mind, it's not actually happening. So if they don't talk about, if they're talking about Nigeria and how the U.S. needs to intervene there because Christians are being killed, if they never bring up Al Jawani and the fact that President Trump was shaking his hand and he was killing Christians at that time and is killing Christians right now in Syria, if they never bring that up, then in their mind, it's not happening. And this is the problem. This is why it just continues on and on and on. Then you have dishonest or delusional people in the alternative media who want to believe that the U.S. is changing under a new president, even though there's zero evidence to suggest that it is. Actually, all evidence suggests otherwise. And so even people who are curious and going outside the boundaries of controlled deep state media, they go to the alternative media and they're getting dishonest and delusional analysis from these people as well. So this is why it continues. This is why it endlessly continues, because people simply, they have no way of waking up. They're trapped. They're trapped in an information bubble where they're not being presented with any sort of truth at all. Now, I said I would get back to encircling China. Let's get back to encircling China. So here's another one. So what President Donald Trump says versus the reality of continuity of agenda. So I'm talking about when President Trump says the U.S. and China are the G2. This is just what he always does. This is what he did during his first term. I was just talking about this, how he shakes everyone's hands. He says, we're good friends. We're going to cooperate. That's the mask. Under the mask, what is actually going on? Continuity of agenda. The constant encirclement and containment of both Russia and China. The turning of nations along their periphery. The militarization of these countries. And then the use of these countries as belligerent battering rams against both Russia and China. The shift in economic and financial policy, trying to cut these countries off and strangle them economically. At one point, again, remember, President Trump, he meets with President Xi Jinping during his first term, and there was all this promise of a new type of constructive relationship between the U.S. and China. By the end of his first term in office, he was snatching the heads of Chinese corporations. He was banning these companies from doing business anywhere in the West. He was coercing the entire collective West, coercing them to ban Chinese companies from selling their products in their markets, and militarizing the Asia Pacific region, encircling China with missiles and taking advantage of previous arms control treaties that both President Bush and Donald Trump both withdrew from unilaterally, pointing these weapon systems at both Russia and China. And so you have to separate what they are saying from what they are actually doing. So President Trump is saying G2, and he's talking about some, you know, compromising and working together with China. All he's doing is creating time and space so that the U.S. can reposition, reorganize itself to continue doing what it has always been doing, which is encircling and attempting to contain both Russia and China, and containing China in the exact same way that they are trying to contain and confront Russia through Ukraine. And so what is this? This is Secretary Pete Hegseth. I met with my counterparts from Australia, Japan, and the Philippines for a second time this year to discuss increased deterrence and readiness in the South China Sea. We share ongoing commitment to ensure peace and stability in the region and are resolute in our partnership to maintain peace through strength. And the U.S. is at constant war. It is not at peace. So the concept of peace through strength is in and of itself is just propaganda. It is irrational propaganda that you have to be in a rational state of mind to even be receptive to peace through strength. The U.S. is not at peace. It is at constant war. So how could it be pursuing a policy of peace through strength if it is already at constant war? So it's peace through constant war? Is that what he's actually trying to convince people of? What is he doing when he says he's meeting with these leaders, Australia, Japan, and the Philippines? What is he doing? He's doing exactly what the U.S. has done in Europe. He's taking all of these countries, he's stitching them, they're politically captured by the U.S. through institutional political capture, through the National Endowment for Democracy, for Japan and South Korea, it's even deeper because the U.S. militarily occupies these two countries following two catastrophic wars fought involving these two countries, Japan, World War II, South Korea, the Korean War. U.S. has been there for decades with its military. It's politically captured these governments. These governments have next to zero sovereignty. And then, of course, Australia has always been part of the Anglo-American global empire. And what they're doing is creating an Asia-Pacific style version of NATO, of what NATO actually is. It doesn't need to be officially some sort of military alliance with some sort of Article 5 guarantee. You can stitch this together to be a de facto version of NATO. And that is what they have done, and that is what they are doing right now. So you could shake hands with President Xi Jinping. You can say U.S. and China are G2. That's what you can say. But what you're actually doing is just continuing to encircle and contain China. That is what you're doing. He's talking about protecting the South China Sea from China when all of the trade going through the South China Sea is coming from or going to China. You can see this is CSIS. This is a U.S. policy think tank. It is funded in part by the U.S. government and all of these corporations that I have talked about, these unelected corporate financier interests. You see all of these countries transiting the South China Sea. They are trading with China. China is their largest trade partner. So this is all commerce going to and from China. So how is the U.S. protecting the South China Sea from Chinese commerce? What he's admitting, openly admitting, whether people realize it or not, he's admitting that the South China Sea is of vital importance to China's economy. We want to encircle and contain China. We want to strangle it economically. We want it to collapse, and we want to subordinate China. And the South China Sea is the artery that we have to squeeze in order to do this, in order to induce the collapse of China. And we are working with these nations we have politically captured, we have subordinated through war and through political capture, or who have always been subjects of Anglo-American empire. And we are going to use them as battering rams against China in the same way we've used Ukraine and now a growing number of other European states as battering rams against Russia. So no matter what they say publicly, this is what they are actually doing in reality. And you have to face that. You can ignore this if you want, but you do it at your own peril. You want to cling to and try to parse what known liars, politicians who constantly lie, you want to parse their comments and try to find some sort of meaning in it, when in fact the only reason they're talking is to misdirect you from what they are actually doing. And this is what they are actually doing, constantly doing. This is what they did all throughout 8 years of Obama, all 4 years of the first Trump administration, all 4 years of the Biden administration. And now they are continuing to do the exact same thing under this second Trump administration, regardless of what President Trump says and does in front of the camera. This is what they are actually doing. That pretty much summarizes what I have been posting over the last week. It is a continuation of my coverage of what is essentially continuity of agenda, U.S. continuity of agenda. Do not let political rhetoric distract you from what the U.S. is actually doing. You have to follow the money. You have to look at what is actually happening physically around the world versus what politicians are trying to tell you they are doing around the world, what their intentions are. They're telling you what their intentions are, but you can see through their actions what their intentions actually are. We need to be wiser. I understand that people, they don't want to be defeatists, and I don't see myself as a defeatist. But I feel that in order for us as the public, the collective global public, for us to affect any sort of change, we have to understand what is really going on right now. We cannot lie to ourselves about how what's going on really isn't all that bad. So we can ignore it, or it's not such a big concern. We can just kind of sit back and let President Trump, Daddy Trump, he will help us. He will steer us through all of this. That's not going to happen. We have to face the reality of what is happening. We have to face the reality of continuity of agenda. We have to find a way to get through to people who simply can't see it. They cannot poke through that information bubble that they're trapped inside. We have to warn people about those in the alternative media who are doing it either out of delusion or in some cases who are deliberately dishonest. We have to cut through all of the lies. Obviously, corporate media is going to constantly lie to us. Politicians in Washington are going to constantly lie to us. We also have to be careful of people who pose as alternative media who are just helping amplify all of these lies for whatever reason, whether it's because they actually thought President Trump was going to change things and they cannot accept that they are wrong, so now they're lying to protect their fragile ego, or because they are compromised in a more sinister way. It's hard to know, but just be aware that these people are out there. Think for yourself. And again, always follow the money. Follow the connections and the associations. Don't let rhetoric, propaganda, and posturing confuse you and misdirect you from logical, sound analysis. And real analysis involves looking at what is actually happening around the world, not trying to engage in confirmation bias regarding what we wish was happening around the world. So that's where I'm going to end the video today. I will be back soon. I have a couple of articles that I'm working on that I will publish and then also present. In future videos, I'm keeping a close eye on the situation in Venezuela. I may do a live stream sometime in the near future to do questions and answers. Or maybe I'll just ask for questions and I will do a question and answer video in the near future. If you thought this video was useful, please like and share. Think about subscribing. It's free to do. It helps the channel grow. Check the video description below for other places you can find and follow my work. I post everything up on X, Telegram, YouTube, and Rumble. When I'm not posting videos, I am posting actual just posts. Again, go to my YouTube channel and go to posts right here. And I will usually post everything here, as well as on X and on Telegram. In the video description of each video will be all of the links that I reference, if I did reference anything specifically in the video, as well as for ways to help support my work. I do not monetize any of my social media platforms. If there are ads that pop up, feel free to skip them. If you're on Telegram and you see some cryptocurrency pyramid scheme that has nothing to do with my channel, clicking on it does not help my channel in any shape, form, or way. Please don't click on it unless you really want to. It's up to you, but it's not helping out my channel. If you do want to help support my channel, please do so through Buy Me a Coffee and also through Patreon. To everyone who has been helping out, whether it's a one-time donation, donations month to month, or if you have no spare resources at all and you're just helping share my work with others, all of that is greatly appreciated. All of that is what makes this work possible. So I thank you sincerely, and as always, thank you for watching.